Hey, this is Ryan Rogers, and I'm the pastor at the Palmer Seventh-day Adventist Church. I hope that this message gives you a glimpse of how beautiful our God is.
So we began last week talking about Isaiah, who said, "Here I am, Lord, send me." And the challenge last week was to volunteer, to live life volunteering to go on mission for God, looking for opportunities. Today we're going to challenge ourselves to bless, to live life, a lifestyle of blessing. Next week we're going to look at the creativity of God, maybe open our mind a little bit to the ways He wants to use us and send us. The following week, so that's May 1, we're going to have a communion service here to finish off our mission emphasis. We're going to hear some testimony and some positive things about how God is sending us. So this is a meaningful time we have ahead of us. As we begin the study today, let's pause and pray. Dear Father in heaven, we love you, and we love what you're doing among us. I'm so thankful for the people who are gathered right here that want to make you a priority in their life and make this church a part of their spiritual journey. I pray that our time now thinking about blessing would be worth it, would be worth the time we spend, that you would speak to us, that we would leave here with a glimpse of you that's meaningful. In Jesus' name, amen. Had to get my bag. So I want one thing to get straight before this sermon, is that this is what I want to get very clear, is that this is not a dress. That's what you guys need to know. This is a galabeah. So I'm going to put this thing on as long as... This is not a dress. That's like point one of the sermon. This is not a dress. And this galabeah, it has all Arabic writing on it. I wore it for an awesome Sabbath we had on April 3 when we did our Sabbath rest. But it's from Egypt because it was given to me when I was a student missionary there. And I know I've told pieces of this story, but I was on break from my normal mission. I was at Nile Union Academy. And I was teaching there, and on our break, we took mission groups to the villages. So Cairo is Europeanized. Not like here, but it's not like villages in Egypt. The villages, they're a very strong culture in the villages. So I would walk around, and you might notice I'm pretty tall and I'm pretty white. And there were not a lot of foreigners in these Upper Egyptian villages. Upper Egyptian villages are in the south because the Nile flows south to north. And I would walk around these streets, and I had a following of kids, and not kids, just people following me. And they would be yelling out, "Sora, Sora," which means picture. Just wanted to get a picture with me. And I went there to serve. I was with the team, and we started doing work at the church's rundown. And I had the job in the heat of climbing up on the iron gate of the church, which hadn't been patented for decades. And I was painting this iron gate. They paint things strange colors, so I think it was this like green color. It was not like super attractive, but it covered the iron gate. And I remember it was hot. I remember I was wearing a really tight t-shirt, which I felt uncomfortable in because the street was crowded with spectators watching the tall white guy climb the gate and paint it. And I was there as a missionary to serve and to give and to bless, but that's not the only thing that happened. I was served and I was blessed. They would invite me, no, they would urge me. They would urge me to come into their homes, and I'd be in their primitive homes with dirt floors, and they'd bring out the most amazing food and tons of it and insist that I ate and tried everything. And then I'd go to the next house and I'd be so full, and they'd want to feed me more and feed me more. And I learned that I couldn't comment and tell them about the things I liked because then they'd give them to me. And that's how I ended up with like 7 galabeahs and scarves and all these things. So I went there as a missionary, but who blessed who? I think we both blessed each other. But I think that the missionary went home with more blessing than he gave. There was mutual blessing happening. And that is so core to what God has called us to. Today, the text is in Genesis 12. I want you to notice this mutual blessing. It says in Genesis 12, actually, in our Sabbath school study, the quarterly is talking about covenant. So if you're studying that, you're studying this concept of covenant. You know we're spiritual ancestors of covenants in Scripture. The Bible is a story of covenant and covenant renewed. And God made a covenant with a man named Abraham. Are you guys able to advance my slides or maybe move the clicker over there? Perfect. There we go. Genesis 12. I think it's the next one. So verse 1 of Genesis 12 says, go. That's the instruction. So notice what God is calling him to do. It's pretty simple. He says, go from your country and to from your kindred and your father's house into a land I will show you. And then verse 2 and 3 are what he's supposed to do when he goes. It says, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. I just want to notice three things real quick from that. One, who is doing the action? Who's the primary doer here? God is speaking, and he says, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will bless those who bless you. God is the initiator. He calls us to do stuff, but only because he initiates that stuff. And then notice, what is the primary action being done? In two verses, blessing, or a form of the word bless, is used 5 times. So there's all these people on earth, and God calls Abraham and says, I'm going to do a special thing. I have a very important mission for you. It's to bless. But then notice the flow of blessing. The flow of blessing says, I will bless you. So where's that coming from? Who blesses who? God to us. And then it says, you will be a blessing. So that's Abraham to other people. And then it says, I will bless. So that's God to others. I will bless those who bless you. That's others to us. So I drew a picture. This is the flow of blessing. It all comes from God. And it comes to us. And it comes to others. And then it flows to others. It is a call to mutual blessing. That's the heart of God. He has all these people who are hurting, needing to learn, wanting to grow in him, and he calls us to extend his blessing to all of his hurting children and to receive blessing from them. So we see that God's blessings come to us for others, and they come to us through others. You following what God called Abraham to do? Pretty simple, isn't it? He called him to go bless all nations, and God says, I will bless you so you can do that, and as you go, I'm going to bless others so they can bless you. So we're going to think about mutual blessings. I have 4 implications that I find from the vision of living in mutual blessing. I think they're pretty exciting. They're pretty simple, but here's the first implication, is that you can bless other people. You can. You can actually live your life in a way that is a benefit to those around you. Maybe you think, I got this, I'm so good at this, I know that. And maybe you need to hear the sermon in a different angle today. But maybe you think, I don't know how to do this, and you need to hear God saying, I can bless you, and blessing can flow through you. This is what it said in Genesis 12:3, through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. That's how God designed it. He could have designed us to be isolated individuals, but he said, I'm going to call you, and through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed, which means you can be a blessing. And then this thought is repeated several times in Scripture. I don't know how you feel about the word blessing. So we're doing a survey. There's a Send Me survey on our website, and it says, join the conversation. You can give your responses. And one response said, I don't relate well to the word bless. I thought about that. And sometimes I don't either. Maybe I have this image of like a mystical, like pronouncing something over somebody. And I think I don't know what that looks like. How do I actually bless people. So I'm going to give you several ideas of how you might think of blessing in a positive way, because in the text, those five uses, I looked up the Hebrew word, and it's just to bless. There's not a lot more that we get from that. The word is Barak, which makes me think of a former president, but the word just means bless. So how can we think of blessing in a positive way? Last week, I gave the call of God as my summary is life-giving love relationship. If you want to bless people, live in a way that promotes life-giving love relationship. Maybe blessing looks like serving. Maybe it looks like other-centered love where you're building others up. Maybe God has called you to be a blessing in their life because in a very real way, you might be the only sermon they ever hear. You might be the only church service they ever attend. You might be the only Bible study they ever have. God has given you an opportunity to be in their life because they might not be exposed to the good things in God that you've been exposed to. I took a class recently and gained a really important perspective. The professor called it the kingdom model. But the kingdom model is living in a way that we push the good onto others. We don't feel guilty in taking good when God intends it for us, but if there's an opportunity for us to push that good onto others, that's exactly how Jesus lived. In fact, Jesus, if there was a situation where someone was getting bad, he would volunteer to take that bad onto him and push the good to others. So living a life of blessing is finding opportunity to push good things in the direction of other people. So maybe you have a hard time with the word blessing. I'm going to use it a lot in this message. We are called to be a blessing, which means we are called to live a life that is good for other people, brings good things into their life. And you can be a blessing. You can't really read exactly what's on the screen, but the question is, how willing are you to be a blessing to others? And we had some responses from this congregation, and they look pretty good to me. It was on a scale of 1 to 5, and it just gets higher and higher as it goes to 5, which means that in general, this group of people is pretty willing to give their time and energy and talents to be a blessing to other people. I love that about this church. I've experienced that in this church. Thank you for being a blessing. And here's some of the responses of ways. The question is, what are some examples of things you do to bless other people? So just listen to some of these. You might have seen these or had these in your life. These are what people probably in this room actually do to bless other people. Use my car to give rides, babysitting, invite people to church or small gatherings, pray, introduce people. That's a huge blessing, just letting people connect. Give out literature, spend time, fill people's needs, Bible study, give my testimony, guide, prison ministries, share music, share food, home repair, moving help, affirmation, show God to children, encourage, good work ethic. I love that one. I bless people by a good work ethic. Remove snow. Spend time. Again, buy groceries. Listen. Live positive. Being kind. Build bunk beds. And this one says vacation Bible school. Send messages. Share the beauty of Alaska with my friends on Facebook. And then this last one helps us remember that we don't run around with a scorecard in our pocket to tally whom we've blessed today. When I read those things and I know that their response is actually from this group right here, I just say, keep it up. Those are awesome things. That's a beautiful lifestyle to live where we're thinking of ways where we can push good onto other people. What are you doing to be a blessing to others? That's what God called Abraham to do. And you can be a blessing. There's two lies I'm going to identify. There's probably a lot more. But two lies that I see that keep us from actually blessing others. The first lie is, I'm not able to bless. It's a lie. The second lie is they're not worth blessing. And that's a lie. So the first one, I'm not able to bless, that's not humility. So we might think that's humility, like, well, I don't want to boast about my skills. I don't want to call myself a blessing. It's not humble for me to say I'm not able to bless you. It's actually a denial of the biblical truth that God said he would bless me and let blessings flow through me. We are not belittling self. We're belittling God when we say that I can't be a blessing. If I believe that I can't live my life to bless you, then I have a low estimation of the power of God to use me for good. You can be a blessing. Don't believe that lie. And then there's a lie that says they're not worth blessing. And let's just remind ourselves that every single person's created in the image of God. Christ died with a heart of love overflowing for every person. And we might say, you know, don't cast your pearls before the swine. So this is just discernment, but it's not discernment. It's a denial of the truth given to Abraham that God desires the blessing to extend to all nations. Through you, all nations of earth, or all families of earth will be blessed. If we ever look at someone and say they're not worth blessing, we're forgetting the heart of God that wants to extend his blessing to every person. So you can be a blessing. You don't have to be perfect to be a blessing. God's blessing can flow through imperfect people. And not just individually, but as a church. This is why I love the community that I see here in Palmer. We can collectively be a blessing. This is how Pastor Sean Brace said it. When designing a vision for our churches, we ought not to ask where our churches will be in 10 years. Instead, we should ask, where will our community be in 10 years? Because we are here. Don't you like that? We collectively can live as a blessing. So there's implication number one from the call to Abraham is you can be a blessing. Implication number two, pretty simple, is that others can bless you. Once again, Genesis 12:3 says, I will bless those who bless you. It's an acknowledgement that there are going to be people out there who enrich your life. And we see that in Abraham's story. He was going and he didn't know where he was going. He went and God put people in his life to bless him. There's this priest, Melchizedek, and he shows up in Abraham's life. He's not a Jew because Abraham, you know, this whole Israel nation is just getting started. He's just a child of God from out there. And he comes into Abraham's life, and what he does is bless Abraham. That's his interaction with Abraham. He meets Abraham and pronounces a blessing on Abraham. Because God says, you will bless all nations, and I'm going to make sure that my blessing flows through them to you. So other people can bless you. I think we have a harder time with this. So these are also from our Send Me surveys. One response says, this is a shortcoming for me. I want people to leave me alone. That said, many bless me. Don't raise your hand, but can anyone relate? So we're talking about being blessed by others, and you're thinking, I just kind of want them to leave me alone, mind their own business. And then that said, there are still a lot of people that God uses to flow his blessing through. Another response said, interestingly enough, sometimes it's easier for me to give than to receive. I think we can relate to that. However, in Alaska, I feel it easier somehow for me to do both equally. Kind of like that comment. Just wondering if maybe God is doing something here to make us more open to being blessed. This person says, in Alaska, somehow I find it easier to live this mutual blessing. Maybe you're finding it that way. Maybe you find that in the Palmer Church, that somehow God is doing something among us that actually breaks down our pride and makes it a little easier for us to be willing to receive God's blessings through other people. But I think we find it harder. This same question, it's just this time, how willing are you to receive blessing? And it's just a little lower. We have a harder time receiving blessing from others than giving blessing to others. Here are some ways people are receiving blessings from others in our church. You'll notice the list I'm about to read is pretty similar to the list I already read. And it should be that way, because if we're blessing others, this is how we should be feeling that blessing. We should be experiencing that. Otherwise, it's just in our imagination. We're not actually blessing. But here are some ways people are receiving blessings in our church. Thoughtful notes, text messages, words of affirmation, home gatherings, patience with me, thoughtfulness, meal train, spend time with me, people saying hi at church, smiles, people asking to sit with me at church, prayer, music. So as I read these things, just know that if you're doing any of these things, it's touching people. If you'd like to touch people, do some of these things. These are ways people are experiencing blessing in our community. It says, like me for who I really am and not just what I can do for them. Teach wisdom, guidance through life, praise the Lord, praising the Lord. Us praising the Lord is a blessing to other people. Share experiences, listen to me, watch my kids, words of affirmation, friendship. Showed interest in my life, gave me a ride, participate in the worship service. If you were part of that group who led our welcome song today, know that participating in the worship service is blessing somebody. Thank you for being a part of it. More responses said, call me and visit, not for gossip. Generously listen. And one said, sometimes they just listen to my rants and share a meal, or I'm giving grace every day on my mistakes and shortcomings, or help me move. So we looked at some lies that keep us from being a blessing. I think there's some lies that keep us from receiving blessings, and they're very similar, but different. So lie number three up there, one thing that keeps us from receiving a blessing is the thought that they are not able to bless me. Another lie that keeps us from receiving a blessing is, I am not worthy of blessing. So let's expose both of those. They are not able to bless me. That's our prejudice, cutting off the flow of blessing. Or, I am not worthy of blessing. Just ask a question of you. Is worthiness a requirement for receiving the blessing of God? No. It never was. We have value that we're created in His image, but you do not need to be worthy for God to want to send blessing your way. I want to spend some time on blessing number three because I think it's particularly, or lie number three, because I think it's particularly disgusting. And it's in my life, and it might be in your life. But the thought, and you might not say it with your words, but the thought we have when we interact with others that we don't really think they have anything to offer us. Because, let's face it, we're better at some things than other people. And we might look at them and see how we are superior in one area and just disqualify that person from being a blessing in our life. It's a really toxic thing. When we refuse to be blessed by others, it's not humility, it's arrogance. It's not independence, it's prejudice. And it's not just this tough pulling our own weight, but it's a delusion that we are superior. Let's think about this for a while. If I live my life thinking they are not able to bless me, it's a really unhealthy, unhelpful way to live. We need to shift our thinking from they need me to we need God. And we live in a mutual blessing where they're going to help me know God and I'm going to help them know God. And just push ourselves a bit further. This superiority that cuts off blessing, it happens individually. So this happens when I look at someone else and I say, they don't have anything to offer me. I'm more attractive. I'm smarter. I'm richer. What could they give me? Or maybe we say, there's just no real potential they could enrich my life because, well, they're too old. They're too young. Or maybe we look at ourselves and we say, I live such a healthier life than them. How could they benefit me? Like, there's all these obvious shortcomings in their life. How could they benefit me? Or I'm more balanced spiritually or emotionally. I'm not sure they have anything to offer me. Do you believe that the people who fall short in areas you don't actually have a blessing for you? That God created them in His image with a different picture of God where they can bless your life and they actually have something to offer you, even though you may see some piece where you are more advanced than them. I pushed myself on this week. Do I look at people who have a lifestyle that I work really hard not to have and disqualify that person from blessing me? Do I look at people who have maybe a less important job or no job at all, or their title's not as impressive. And because of that fact, I don't expect God to use them to enrich my life. Do I look at people who are disabled? Maybe someone who has a mental disability, and I reason that because their brain's not functioning fully, God cannot actually use that precious individual to enrich my life. Because that's a lie. Do I look at people who maybe are physically handicapped and they don't walk and run like I do, and I look at those obvious shortcomings and I think, there's nothing there for me? Well, we're missing out on blessing. If we cut off the flow of blessing because we look at anyone and say, God doesn't have anything for me there. Or maybe we look at someone who's addicted to things that we would never have in our life, right? There's a destructive lifestyle they're living, and we look at that and we can't see past that to know that maybe there's a life experience or maybe there's something in their personality that actually is exactly what I need to know God more. Like if I just got over the smell and the look and the thing that is in front of me that I can't get over, if I got over that, God may intend to give me the richest blessing through the person that I look down on. I don't know if it's convicting for you, but I could have a whole lot more blessing in my life if I got over my superiority. And we do this culturally too. You know, I don't think it's a mistake that the world is colored with all kinds of variety and culture. I think God had a hand in setting up culture. But if you've ever gone cross-culturally, they just do things that you know are wrong because that's not how you do them. And we have this superiority of our American or Alaskan or whatever culture you want to identify with. We just think that's the right way to do it. And we look at those other ways of doing it and we think, it'd be so much easier, you know, if you showed up on time, right? It'd be so much easier if you lived life this way. But culturally, if we look at that culture and say, they don't have anything to offer me, we cut off blessing. And ethnically, so this class I took recently, the professor was a missionary in India for 10 years. So this was his experience, a story he told that got me thinking about superiority. So he went to India, and he was kind of a hero back home. When he'd come home on furlough, they'd say, what's it like to be a missionary? And they called him this missionary. He was something special, something exciting. He was giving his life for missions. What he did over there was he taught in Adventist schools in India, and he was doing great things. God was using him. Well, while he was there, he married an Indian, and she came back with him after his 10 years there, and began to live in America. So he teaches, and she also taught in Adventist schools, and no one ever asked her, what's it like to be a missionary? No one ever called her a missionary. She's not a missionary, because the missionary is the one who goes from North America to those other places and gives them all the good stuff we have. That's a missionary. A missionary is not the one who comes there and gives us a picture of God that we need. Do you see how that story kind of doesn't work well? When I assume that others don't have anything to offer me because I come from North America, they need me. Well, I think God would like to rearrange how we think and let us receive blessings from others. And it happens, and this is like the one that's the hardest for me, it happens religiously. We look at a world and cut off blessing because we're part of the remnant church. I've been told this as a young person excited about outreach and God and all these things in high school. I was told by someone, they quoted that verse from Isaiah 8, you know, to the law and to the testimonies, if they do not speak according to these, they have no light in them. And what they meant by that was, they may be awesome people. You may get excited about all the things they teach you about Jesus. But if they're not Seventh-day Adventist, you know it's probably demonic. You know you shouldn't, you know, whatever they're teaching about Jesus is not going to enrich your life. That's what I was told. We cut off blessing because we start thinking that our little world of religion is the one that has blessing for the world and that God would not design to bring someone who doesn't know the truths I know and actually bring them alongside me and help me know God. We could open the floodgates of blessing if we stopped feeling superior to other people. So that's what I see, implication number two. other people can bless you. I love that thought. Other people can bless you. Live your life looking for the blessings of God in every interaction you have. Not selfishly, but because you know God is a God of mutual blessing, and he has surprises for you today of how he wants to draw you close to him from the people you would least likely expect to see them in. So implication number three is the exclusivity is just unacceptable. The call is, through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. So any attempt, whether it's individually, culturally, ethnically, religiously, to say, that's not meant for this person, that is just unacceptable in the heart of God. There's a couple scholarly words in a row here, okay? So hang with me through several quotes. But I was reading this chapter of this book by Christopher Wright. The book is called Mission of God. The chapter was called God's Peculiar People. And underneath it, it said, Chosen for All. I love that. Chosen for All. And he laid out Genesis 12 in a way that opened my eyes. So Genesis 12, verse 3, we've read it already. But he brings this tension out. And it says, the tension between the universality of the goal, all nations, and the particular of the means, through you, is right there from the beginning of Israel's journey. Let me just think about that for a minute. It says, through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. In those few words, there's a great tension because it says there's a special people. Through you, you're special. God has called you. Through you, all nations. And so there's a tension between the particularity of the person called and the universality of the goal. Now, we got to wrestle with that. So we have, in our survey, I asked the question, how much would you agree with this statement? We are called, hang on, we are called to be set apart from the world as God's remnant people. And you can see that there's a little hesitation, but in general, over 50% said, we are called to be set apart as God's remnant people. I love this church. I had a Bible study this week where I got to share some of the Seventh-day Adventist fundamental beliefs, and I was pumped because I just reminded how precious it is to understand God with more clarity, to see his character. God has given a special calling and message to this church. We are called to be set apart from the world. We aren't called to live just like the world as God's remnant people. I think Genesis 12:3 affirms that. Then I asked the question, should we be engaged with the world around us? And it went up. More people are saying, yes, we should be engaged with the world around us. And then it went up even more when I asked the question, the church should be an inclusive community that is engaged with their larger community. A few said one because maybe inclusive means in your mind that we approve of everyone's views. No, that's not what I'm talking about. Talking about loving people who see things differently, including them, inviting in to the mission of God. So Genesis 12:3 has this tension. It says, through you, you're special, you're called all nations. If we ever lose that tension and don't remember that there's a calling on our life in our church, I think we'll miss out on living in God's mission. And if we ever forget the goal that it was meant for everyone, we're going to miss out on a lot of blessing. So there's a tension here. Remember, I had some scholarly words. So coming after this verse, I'm going to bring up some more of Christopher Wright. This is a verse in Isaiah that is pretty outstanding. It says, in that day, Israel will be the third with Egypt and Assyria. So if you go through biblical history and you remember Egypt and Assyria, Assyria is the ones, you know, in 1721 who marched into Jerusalem and took them captive before the Babylonians. So these are enemies of God's people. But in this verse, it says, in that day, and Israel's the one that enslaved, or Egypt's the one that enslaved them. So these are like names. We shouldn't like these people, right? These are bad people. But it says in Isaiah 19, in that day Israel will be the third with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth, whom the Lord of hosts has blessed, saying, blessed be Egypt my people, and Assyria the work of my hand, and Israel my inheritance. Oh, wow. There is a particularity of the calling, but there's a universality of the goal. And here, Egypt is God's people, Assyria is the work of his hands, and Israel is his inheritance. So here is Christopher Wright's reflection on that. The identity of Israel will be merged with that of Egypt and Assyria, such that the Abrahamic promise is not only fulfilled in them, but through them. In other words, God's blessing flows through all people. Even people who don't believe like me. God's blessing flows through all people. And he continues, so these foreign nations come not only to experience blessing, but to be a blessing on the earth. The Abrahamic promise is a self-replicating gene. Those who receive it are immediately transformed into those whose privilege and mission it is to pass it on to others. And then finally, this is a clarifying thought for me. So Christopher Wright quoted this man. So I'm quoting someone who quoted somebody, but it's worth it. It says, election does not cut Israel off from the nations. It situates that people in relationship with them. So, read it choppy there. But the point is, the special calling of God on your life and on the Adventist church does not cut us off from the nations. It actually positions us in a special way to have a relationship of blessing with the nations. Did you see that difference of calling? There is a special calling on the church, a special calling to be a special blessing to the nations. So exclusivity is just unacceptable. And finally, I want to say, to bless is success. That's an implication I get from Genesis 12. To bless is success. So here we see all this that we've read already. I will be a blessing to you. You will be a blessing to them. And just ask yourself, is there something missing here? I mean, it kind of looks like there's something missing here. Like, where's the instruction, God, to Abraham about church planting, baptism, Bible studies? Like, all these things we know we need to be doing, that's missing here. And we have to wrestle with this calling. Is it overly simplistic, or is it exactly what it was supposed to be? Here's the way we could put the question to us. Which is it? Bless in order to do ministry, or do ministry in order to bless? Bless in order to do ministry is the concept of an entering wedge. I'm going to do this act of service to gain sympathies or allegiance with you. It could just be manipulation. I'm going to do this thing not because blessing is a goal, but in order that I might do the other things because I need to baptize you. So bless in order to do ministry is blessing is good because it helps us accomplish all that other stuff we know we need to do. Following me? Do ministry in order to bless is understanding a heart of God that wants to bless and understanding every single thing I do as ministry is a blessing. And it's a blessing to teach people about the Sabbath where they can rest with their Creator. It is a blessing to do Bible studies. It is a blessing to baptize people. We have a baptism in 2 weeks, and let me tell you, I was told by the person being baptized, I can't keep them out of the water because it's a blessing in their life to be baptized. Every single thing we do, a church service, planting churches, going door to door, giving out literature, smiling at someone at the bank, every single thing we do for God should enrich the life of the person receiving it. We do ministry, all kinds of it, because it's a blessing. So if we could redefine a win, we could celebrate more success. I don't want you to miss this. If we could redefine a win, we could celebrate more success. And it's not just lowering the goalpost. It's not lowering the standards. If the win is only somebody becoming a member of our church, then we get to celebrate once a month. If the win is blessing others, then we literally could have an opportunity to celebrate success with heaven about every 3 minutes of our day. Like, not joking. Every time you interact with somebody or send an encouraging text or see someone smile or have a meaningful conversation or sit around that campfire and talk about life, every interaction we have that's a blessing, you could know that you could celebrate that as a win for heaven. I love that way of living. So I came across this phrase in that same class. It says, the kingdom is in the moment. So we were reflecting in that class on Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, on Jesus sitting on the mountainside with people, and realizing that the kingdom of God is not just something in the future when everything's made perfect, but there's something sacred about every moment of connection we have with another human being created in the image of God. We experience the richness of the kingdom of heaven every time there's encouragement, a listening ear, someone caring about someone else, someone serving someone else. And what this does for me, the thought of redefining a win to be blessing, is that it makes me so eager, excited to live life in mutual blessing. Like, I want to go out there and find out what surprise God has for me today to bring me a blessing through others and what way he could use me. I want to close this service and meet people in the hall and celebrate success in mutual blessing. I want to go to fellowship meal in just a few minutes and enjoy mutual blessing and know that heaven is celebrating because we're blessing one another. If we could redefine a win, we could be celebrating a whole lot more. We wouldn't have to hang our head and feel like defeated, unproductive Seventh-day Adventists. We would feel like people who the Spirit of God is moving through, and we are experiencing success for God all throughout our day. So here are some implications of Genesis 12 that I see in this mutual blessing. You can bless other people. Other people can bless you. Exclusivity is unacceptable. And to bless is success. So there's a statue outside of Andrews University, and this is John Andrews and his children. You might know that they were our first missionaries sent out by the General Conference overseas. So in 1874, they set out, and they did work in Europe and Switzerland, but they set out and went across the Atlantic. And there is a prayer that was prayed. They call it the Andrews Benediction. We're going to close our service with that. But I realize I got ahead of myself. I need to tell you about this. I want to remind you of something before you leave, and this is on YouTube, and you have the pastor standing here in this thing. This is not a dress. Do you remember what it is? It's a galabeya. Actually, after this message, that is an okay answer, but it's not the answer I'm looking for. So level one answer is pastor's wearing a dress. Level two answer is you're a little more culturally aware. Pastor's wearing a galabeya. Level three answer is, this is a blessing. It's a blessing. This is a story of someone loving me and me receiving blessing. And when we think that way, what is your car? Level one answer, it's a car. Maybe a level two answer, it's transportation. Level three answer, it's a blessing. What is your house? It's a blessing. What is your schedule? It's a blessing. Or a potential blessing. If you choose to live in this world of mutual blessing, it's not just stuff, it's not just time, it's not just talent, it's not just energy, it is a blessing that God wants to use to extend his blessing to the world. So back to John Andrews, here's the benediction that he wrote in the Adventist Review and that we're going to be sent away with today. It says, and now, as we set forth, we commit ourselves to the merciful protection of God, and we especially ask the prayers of the people of God that his blessing may attend us in this sacred work. We're going to reflect now on a song on the screen. May God's blessing attend you in the sacred work of living in mutual blessing.
Thanks for listening to this message from the Palmer Seventh-day Adventist Church. Find us online at palmerak.adventistchurch.org and at PastorRyanRogers.com.